pase, pierna derecha, directo al arco, golazo, golazo.
The world of football with a soccer perspective. This is Soccer Today with Dwayne Mullins and Kevin Larame, live on the Sports Podcasting Network.
Good day, good night, and welcome to Soccer Today for Friday, February 14th, 2020. Happy Valentine's Day to everyone, especially my wife. Joining us today on the show to talk about Nashville, the stadium saga, and more, of course, the Zimmerman trade, and more, Drake Hills from the Tennessean. He's a Nashville beat writer for the Tennessean. How you doing today, Drake?
I'm pretty good, but I don't know about this whole Valentine's Day thing. I think this thing needs to expire because, you know, I haven't bought into it for quite some time. I'm going to reconstruct this and say, no, this is the first full day that Nashville SC has had the stadium plan approved. How about we go with that?
Hey, that counts as a love story. There you go.
There you go. I'm going to a Valentine slasher movie tonight. Does that count? It's called Valentine's from 2001. So it's a murder mystery. But anyway, Drake.
Very niche movie. Very niche movie.
There you go. Drake, it's good to have you back. And, of course, when we booked you before this, there wasn't a solution to the stadium deal. Yesterday, it came down that the stadium is a go now, that an agreement has been broached to allow, well, a second agreement, really. But why don't you take the listeners through a bit of what's happened over the past couple weeks leading up to the agreement yesterday?
Yes, so Nashville SC, and particularly Nashville Soccer Holdings, which is the official ownership group's legal title, as well as the Metro Nashville or the city council, came to an agreement. As you said, it was really a second coming of what was originally the agreement. Now, the biggest thing is the fact that, you know, there was a big turnover in the infrastructure costs, but even more, the stadium costs. So what was to be about $35 million that the city was on the hook for in terms of stadium costs, that $35 million as well as another $19 million, all will be on Nashville SC's ownership's dime. So in addition to that, what is $54 million, Nashville SC will also be responsible for all stadium costs. Now, this total stadium, it will be totaled around $335 million. So this is officially a fully privately funded stadium, although the original agreement was not necessarily half and half, but it was partly publicly funded with a lot of the stadium costs going to the club. Additionally, the Parcel 8C, which is a part of this 10-acre piece of the land in which the stadium is expected to be built on, now, you know, with this, they still are in contract to provide affordable housing and build some developments. John Ingram, the majority owner of Nashville SC, said last night that he would like to see some green space on that 10 acres, as well as an additional 100 feet, basically cautionary space between whatever is to come on the other lot, which many have suspected to be a race car, auto racing development. There would be at least 100 feet in between that. And also in this agreement that the mayor and the city council have agreed that demolition on what is called the Nashville Fairgrounds is to start immediately. Now, what that means exactly, with a lot of sort of basically, you know, old developments, having to get the actual machines down there, having to plow away anything that, you know, you may need before demolition, all that stuff, it still needs to take place. So what they expected is sometime this weekend when actual demolition would begin. And then, of course, they would soon, probably in the next month or so, begin construction, which we're cutting it tight because, you know, they want this stadium, not only the club, but also the city was agreed to have this stadium go up and be ready for the 2022 MLS season. Of course, you're cutting it close. So in my opinion, I think it's a really a huge win on the city's part to convert a lot of the financial obligation of infrastructure, but as well as stadium costs, all the way, you know, to the other side to the club's ownership. And so now it is, as I said, officially a privately funded stadium.
Drake, obviously those in the soccer community are probably very excited about this, and I'm sure there's a portion of people in Nashville that were never going to be satisfied with any deal, that they just didn't want any money at all or any connection at all to a stadium. But the people in the middle that matter the most, I think, in situations like this, do you get the sense that the average person in Nashville that was maybe not soccer crazy but might go out and check out a game is happy with the deal that they've got now?
No, I think it's interesting because I think before this saga really took off at the end of last month with basically the current situation, or I guess at that point was the current situation, had became public thanks to MLS Commissioner Don Garber and Nashville SC ownership releasing a public joint statement regarding what has been going on. However, at that time, I think that, as I've said, talked to many people about this, I think the soccer buzz took a turn and went from curiosity to animosity because not only of the money that is involved, but also were already skeptical of a new sport. I mean, taking a look at Nashville, there's not a historical soccer ground. Now, this market and what Nashville SC is trying to do is trying to garner buzz, but also interest and perhaps educate the greater Nashville, Middle Tennessee area on this game from the ground up. And they've done that successfully through their own events and bringing in some U.S. men's national team players. But in terms of having a home, I think that this became a discouraging moment, like you said, for that middle demographic. Now, the fact that they do have a stadium now, do they bring that demographic back? I mean, there's possible. It's a possibility, but I think it's going to take this upcoming season to get those fans to really buy in and come check out a game. And particularly, you know, going up against Atlanta United on the first game, February 29th, and then you've got two really tough road games against Portland Timbers and Toronto, and then you come back and go up against Columbus Crew and Seattle Sounders. You know, those are some big games, and if you show up and have some great performances, I think, you know, on the field success is going to have a big play into getting those middle demographic fans to buy in long term.
Drake, one repercussion of this whole saga, which kind of is surprising and probably not what Mayor John Cooper intended, is the free publicity Nashville SC has been getting over the last month. According to sources now with Nashville front offices, there's about 40,000 tickets sold for the opening game versus Atlanta at Nissan Stadium, and a lot has been accredited to the free publicity that Nashville SC did get on the news over the last month. It wasn't really on the news before, and on multiple sources right now, if you look at different social medias and Nashville fans forums and supporters talking to each other, they agree that this thing, yeah, it doesn't look good, and you never want your city to renege a deal that was done before. Also, for perception purposes, doesn't give you a good reputation. But what Mayor John Cooper did might have helped Nashville sell tickets. What do you think of this hypothesis, and what do you think of the amount of tickets sold for the opening game at Nissan Stadium?
Yeah, well, that's correct. They have sold at upwards of 40-some thousand tickets for the opening game, but I think we all need to be careful with this report in terms of, you know, believing that this soccer stadium saga contributed to or solely contributed to the uprise in season tickets and single game tickets as well. I think what surges, and then Ian Ayer, the chief executive officer of Nashville SC, told reporters last night, is that, you know, this was due to the uprising in positive negotiations. And then, of course, the announcement, you know, certainly helped out. But to think that the tough negotiations solely contributed to, you know, let's say some 7,000 to 8,000 tickets sold in the past couple of weeks, it wouldn't be absurd, but it would be something to look at even deeper, because I wouldn't necessarily agree that, you know, even a stalemate between both sides caused folks to be more curious and say, let's see, I want to go to a game. I want to go to the first game and check it out and see what's going on. And as a matter of fact, I would argue that it didn't help that, there was essentially an all-time low in making this thing public and, writing a letter to fans, asking them for their support, to email John Cooper, the mayor of Nashville, to write him on Twitter, to call him at his mayoral office, to what they would call it hashtag build the stadium and make their proposal for that. I wouldn't say that, single game tickets, particularly for this first game, is a product of that. But I will say that in the past couple of days, they've seen, a surge, as what Ian Ayer called it, in season single game ticket sales, not just for the Atlanta game, but they're trying to contribute the success. And of course, the reports leading up to yesterday's announcement. So, in the past couple of days, the success of positive negotiations, reaching closer and closer to an agreement, those were the reports that not only I think, but I think the club thinks contributed to the surge in the game ticket sales for the Atlanta United match.
Last time you were on the show, Drake, you were talking about how Nashville wants to be a bit anonymous in their first year. They don't want to stand out with their amount of defeat. They just want to be. And of course, earlier this week, there was a big trade, the Zimmerman trade, where they give maybe all the way to $1.25 million in allocation to LAFC to get one of the best center back in the league. Do you think it's a movement to reassure the defense and give Nashville a chance to be in games and not necessarily big blowouts and not have a difficult first year and just exist and learn? Do you think that there's a correlation between the Zimmerman trade and also the fact that they do not want to necessarily be an outlier in MLS also this year?
Well, they want to compete first and foremost, and I think every GM, every club executive, every owner, every coach would say that. But I think if you take a look at what they've been doing since really November, December of this past year, they haven't shied away from spending, but they've been very conservative in where they spend it and at what position do they want to spend it. And let's be honest. I mean, Walker Zimmerman was not something that, came up in the past couple of days. Now, of course, the stance and, where on the spectrum the negotiations had come and the promise of these negotiations really hyped up in, earlier this week. However, it isn't a surprise that, they were willing to spend this amount of money, but it all is thanks to, where they were during the expansion draft in November, where they were, at the end of the MLS season, where they were in January, as they got the bulk of their group, in their own doors before they began camp. So it's a strategy for Mike Jacobs, the GM, to be, as he likes to use the word, frugal, and have a what he likes to say, a war chest of money, not necessarily to spend up front, but, as the season goes on, they've been very incremental in their studying, and as they get response and as they can test out the waters in the beginning of the season, this may be something that, we all will see in July, in June, in August, during the summer transfer window, whether it be someone within of Walker Zimmerman's caliber, maybe not. Maybe this could possibly be a DP signing from overseas, whether South America or Europe or elsewhere. But this isn't necessarily a one-time ordeal, and it's simply based on the fact that they have been very precise and very studious regarding where and how they spend their money. But there's never been a question as to if they want to spend money or not. It's just they've been very sensitive to who they spend their time on and who they want to bring into their doors for this first season.
It seems to me from the outside, Drake, that they're trying to build through a skeleton, which a lot of teams do. They're trying to build up the middle. And they're also trying to build domestic with solid MLS veterans there to sort of solidify things. Do you think that's fair? Do you think that their approach in the early going is going to be mostly to create a strong core of domestic players? And then when you can add, when you're ready to take that next step, you might bring in a DP that can be a game changer from outside the domestic situation?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think, you know, from the start, that's been a big priority for the front office. If you take a look at, you know, as you talked about the spine of the team, you know, there, I think, in my opinion, I think a good and one of the best acquisitions being able to acquire in, you know, less than a day's time, acquire Dave Romney and Dax McCarty. You've got Dave Romney, who was a quality, you know, experienced and MLS center back, who can also play left back. And then obviously you've got a 14-year veteran. He's going on his 15th year. And Dax McCarty, someone who's proved himself not only in MLS, but also with the national team in Gold Cup and some other competitions. And, you know, taking a look, even going up front, there's no mistake in signing your first DP as a number 10 and making that full line up the middle. It's definitely something that we should take a look at going, as I said, going into the summer, maybe, you know, center forward, having that be that DP, that next DP be a center forward who can give them, you know, 10 to 12 goals. And the way they're playing, you know, they want to build from the back and have it what will likely be Walker Zimmerman and Dave Romney in the center, and build into Anibal Godoy and Dax McCarty, and then obviously, you know, allow Hani Mukhtar to pull the strings and create in the attack in third, and allow to have a lot of their goal production come from him. And that's just, it matches their playing style. Who they're signing is definitely matching their playing style, and it's shown in the past couple of preseason games.
Yeah, I my question, as always, with any team that's coming in is where the goals are going to come from, and you don't have that dominant player that you can point to and say there's 20 there, right? Do you think that the Nashville fans are going to accept to grind it out, kind of try and win games 1-0 or take draws on the road? Do you think that's going to be enough to create excitement in the city so long as the team's competitive, or do you think you need to find a way to get a little more pizzazz, for lack of a better way to put it, into the stadium, particularly during home games?
Yeah, I don't think, you know, winning 1-0 is probably going to do it. I don't think so. I think, you know, I'm not sure how, obviously, we haven't played a game. We haven't seen a game at Nissan Stadium or elsewhere in MLS for this team. We haven't seen this team play at all. But, you know, this is a team that is built for those 1-0 wins. However, I think to get fans really on their feet, to really be excited about this team, you need to have someone who's going to add some pizzazz. You know, add someone who's going to be electric, take players on one-on-one. Now, from what I've heard and from what I've seen, you know, a young DP type of player who in Randall Leao, coming in from Saprissa in Costa Rica, who's going to be out there on the left wing, you know, he's going to probably give a lot of spice. But, you know, they don't have an out-and-out goal scorer right now. They don't have someone that you can point to and say, oh, you know, that's 10, you know, 15 goals right there. They don't have that person right now. It's going to be a lot of you take a piece, I take a piece, he takes a piece. But you can't really rely on that being a consistent production system for at least, you know, going up against some of the top opponents inconsistently throughout, you know, a long season like that, like we see in MLS. So there, like I said, there's going to need to be whether someone to step up or there's going to need to be a big signing coming soon.
You mentioned Saprissa, and by the way, the Montreal Impact and the Montreal Impact fans thank Nashville for getting one of the best players of Saprissa out of Saprissa before the CONCACAF Champions League next week, where Montreal obviously will face Saprissa in a home and away situation in a knockout stage of the CCL. When you're looking at Nashville now, 15 days before their first game at home versus Atlanta, do you expect any more roster movement, maybe a late minute addition to the roster? Are you expecting more, or is this roster the one that Nashville will have to deal with until the secondary transfer window this summer?
Well, there's time that's running out, right? With the primary MLS window soon to close, So I'm not. I wouldn't be surprised. I think Walker Zimmerman, of course, when Paul Tenorio from The Athletic had broke that, I wasn't necessarily shocked, but you know, I also was taking into account what I was told from the clubhouse and saying that they wanted their full squad in before preseason starts. So I was very much under the impression and prepared to say, okay, well, this is who's going to start this MLS season for Nashville FC. Obviously, Walker Zimmerman coming in with not only, if you take a look at LAFC side, you know, they've got a CONCACAF Champions League match to prepare for, but also, you know, Walker Zimmerman is probably, I've been told that, you know, he's heading down to Tampa, Florida, you know, right now to get into camp with Nashville. But Nashville has just two preseason games left. So in order to, you know, build that cohesion, that chemistry with your teammates, you know, this is pretty much crunch time for them. And sort of bringing in another player, you know, I won't rule it out. I don't think that, you know, creating an absolute would be quite a smart move. But, you know, I think the majority of the team here, I don't think you're going to see someone, you know, drastic, you know, come in and stand out. But, you know, that's just my intuition, but I will not rule it out. I mean, we've seen that they are willing to spend if they see the right opportunity.
Drake Hills covers Nashville SC for the Tennessean beat writer. Thank you very much for your time today, Drake. We appreciate having you on the show. We love Nashville because it's not boring yet. It's been interesting. It's been fascinating. And that's all we can ask for, in good and bad, as long as we're talking about it. Thank you for your time today. And we hope you have a great journey to first MLS kickoff in Nashville in 15 days.
Yeah, I appreciate it, guys. You know, to follow Nashville SC, go ahead and Tennessean.com. And we'll keep you guys updated on what's going on down here in the Music City.
And we'll be right back after this short break.
You are listening to Soccer Today. Follow us on Twitter at Soccer Today SPN and like our Facebook page, facebook.com/sportspodcastingnetwork. You can find the podcast version of all the shows we do on iTunes, Apple Podcast, Google Play Store, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, and anywhere you get your podcast.
And we're back on Soccer Today, patreon.com/sportspodcastingnetwork for our premium podcast feed, where you can follow Dwayne and I for the Canadian soccer premium podcast called the Two Solitude Soccer Podcast and more on patreon.com/sportspodcastingnetwork. And you know, Drake Hills is right, Dwayne. The Tennessean is a great source of news. That's where I've been getting a lot of my news and at least a context for the whole Nashville Stadium saga, which, like we said earlier in the show, is finished. It is agreed upon. They will not renege the deal they did before, but even though they kind of did, and there's a bit less for Nashville and John Ingram especially. But I guess the mayor got what he wanted after all. But it's not the only story that is continuing to grab the attention. Another MLS expansion team this year is struggling to get what they want. Now, after saying yesterday and after reading it very, very different places, Pizarro to Miami is potentially done. But now Monterrey is crying foul. Monterrey is saying, well, there was some tampering here because Pizarro in an interview mentioned how he talked to David Beckham on the phone. Well, David Beckham's literally an MLS executive. He's literally owner of a team. You can't just be calling players and talking on the phone when they're under contract with another team. That's called tampering. Yeah, it's never easy for Miami, Dwayne.
Yeah, well, since it's an English fellow involved, that's called by the English term. That's tapping up, at any rate. Look, yeah, I as I said to you off air, there's a certain irony to Lee Maxey talking about, you know, manipulating where players go with owners, sort of doing sideways things. So it's a little different when you're talking directly to a player to try and convince him to play. Tampering is such a strange concept in North American sports. We see it in the NBA all the time, where what is tampering exactly? And I think David Beckham in this case is thinking like a player still, you know? He's like, as a player, there's kind of a gray area there. Like, yeah, if your buddy's with a guy, you send him a text message, you should come check out, you know, Miami or wherever.
Or it could be just like a conversation, right? Oh, yeah, it's a great here. Yeah, exactly. Which is technically not tampering, but it's not tampering either. You're right. But that's the difference. As an executive, you can't really cross that line. So
yeah, you can't have contact with them without permission from the club.
Literally.
It's a funny thing, too, because it's unique to sports, right? Like any of us that are on LinkedIn know that recruiters will contact you all the time. If you're in the right kind of field, right? And that's, no one's questioning that. So it's a weird sort of scenario altogether.
They could, though. It depends, of course, of the scale. For example, you're a big engineer for, let's say, Boeing or Airbus, right? You're a big engineer and another firm comes and grab you. There could be tampering and something involved, security contract. We've seen it in the business world, but you're right. In the sports world, it's kind of highlighted a bit, and it's kind of... Because it's so hyper-focused and there's media and there's a lot of people looking at this, it could be maybe detected easier, more easily, and maybe proved more easily. I don't know. But yeah, you're right.
I don't think this will prevent anything. Ultimately, what might happen here is that there might be some stern conversations that take place between Mr. Beckham and MLS and Monterrey. Perhaps maybe there's a check written at some place. Maybe there's a gentleman's agreement into place.
Monterrey won they won the Liguilla, right? So they will be the one in the Campeones Cup, right? Isn't that funny? And then in the Campeones Cup, maybe they'll host a game and maybe they'll make money off of it. Maybe that's the consequence. Of course, it's all speculation here. Yeah, it's funny how life is sometimes.
Yeah, well, the best thing about Toronto losing MLS Cup is they don't have to host the Campeones Cup this year again. And that's probably made everyone happy because no one here cares. Anyway,
no one here, no one there, no one everywhere.
Yeah. Well, in Atlanta, they're still talking, or at MLSsoccer.com, where they talk about Atlanta having won a double last year.
Yeah.
I've heard that term several times this offseason. They did not win a double.
Okay. Do you count the shield, the community shield? Do you count that as a double? No.
Well, that's
the Super Copa?
Is the argument. Like Jose Mourinho, when he was at Manchester United, claimed he won a treble in his first year because they won the League Cup, the Europa League, and the Community Shield. So everyone laughed because it's laughable, just as it's laughable that Atlanta won a double last year. At any rate,
it's pedantic. It's literally like taking the definition of the world. It's playing on words. It's semantics, but. Yeah, no, it's not true. Doesn't make it so. It does not make it so, number one.
Yes. It's not a cup. It's an exhibition. At any rate, moving on from that, like I said, I don't think it's going to happen with Miami here, but I do think it will be perhaps change how David Beckham is used, and they're going to have to be a little more careful about it. And I think that there's an element of, excitement over reporting everything that Bex does, right? And that's... He's got to be used to this at this point. It's like, what's the man? Yeah. This man's what, 45 or something?
I don't know. I wish I looked like that when I'm 45, but that's the point.
I mean, a lot of folks do, but it's
doesn't.
Nonetheless, he's not a young man anymore in the sense that he shouldn't understand his celebrity. He should understand fully that everything he does is going to get talked about. So he can't just be making phone calls like that. At the very least, when he makes a phone call like that, he has to say, look,
don't talk
about
it.
Tell anyone that we have this conversation. Because that's really all that matters here.
That's really the problem here. Is Rodolfo, why the F are you talking about the media, about the phone call we had? This was supposed to be between you and I. There goes your performance clause out of your contract is going to be served to pay the litigation coming out of you opening your mouth, Rodolfo.
Yeah, I'm excited. I met David Beckham. I guess that's what it is. He is bigger than life if you ever met him, which is ironic because he's not very big. At any rate.
No, that depends. Do you count the entourage? Because if you do, he's taking a lot of space.
Yeah, the toque he was wearing the day that I interviewed him was larger than him, I think.
Oh, yeah.
He's a wee little man. This is the point we're making. He's a very tiny little man.
He's good, though. Right? Like, it's a bucket list type of thing. I saw David Beckham score a free kick at the Olympic Stadium in 2012.
There you go. Yeah, did I ever see David Beckham score? Because he barely played in Toronto. because the first couple of years he came in the league, the turf was here, right? So he wouldn't play. He did play a couple games, but I'm not even sure I ever saw him play against TFC. I'm not 100% sure. Anyway, moving on from that. That's, you know, for our retro podcast that we'll be sure to put out one day from the Sports Podcasting Network where we talk about old games. It's like...
That could be fun, though. That you're laughing? But that's a good idea. Like a what-if podcast. Like, what if we existed back, I don't know, like in 2010, covering the Olympics on the Five Rings podcast? Oh, wait, yep. We're doing that the next episode. So, yeah, how about we do that for soccer? That could be fun. That would be fun. How about you and I travel back in time and cover the 1994 World Cup one day?
That would be fine. It's expensive to try and get that time machine working, and I don't want anyone to know I have one.
I know a guy. Don't worry.
Yeah, I got guy. You. I have some things I need to change. Oh, do I have some things I need to change? At any rate, there's a podcast actually on Football Daily or Football Ramble. They do greatest games on Saturday with the Blizzard, but they're almost, well, not almost. They are entirely focused on Europe. I do actually think that it is a good idea for a podcast. I don't know if there's enough hours in the day for us to do it, Kevin, but
we can always do it on our Patreon feed. You can go to patreon.com/sportspodcast and it's work. And maybe one of these weeks when we don't know what to do for our SPN extra feed, you'll have Dwayne and I talking about an old game. How about that?
There you go. That's, it's not a bad idea. But as we brainstorm live on the air here, it's Friday and it's Valentine's Day. So if you haven't got the gift yet, I do, as Bob McCowan used to always say on Sportsnet, may he rest in peace. He's not dead, but he's on the air.
It's like he's not dead.
You can always go to Petro-Canada and pick up some beef jerky today if you've forgotten. Good luck with that if that's what you do. But nonetheless, I think I'm going to stop talking now.
Did any of our listeners actually like buy the beef jerky when you go to like the convenience store or the gas station? Like, I know it's there. I see the package, but it seems to me like it's the same package since 1995.
Maybe it is. That cow lived in the 80s. If we could talk, it would have stories to tell.
Yeah, no, exactly. On that note, happy Valentine's Day, everyone. Tell your loved ones that you love them. And if you don't have a loved one, tell yourself that you love yourself. Because that's as worth it also. It is Valentine's Day after all, only once a year. And of course, happy Valentine's Day to my wife. Until Monday for Soccer Today. We'll be back on Monday to start previewing the CONCACAF Champions League round of 16 with our good friend Charles Bohm on Monday. And of course, we'll have more of the world of football with a soccer perspective. You can follow Dwayne on social media at 24th Minute, myself at Kev Larme, and this show at Soccer Today SPN, live Monday to Friday, 11 a.m. Thanks to Drake Hills for his time today. You can follow him on Twitter at LiveLifeDrake. And until Monday, as always, have a great soccer.
You can find the podcast version of all the shows we do on iTunes, Apple Podcast, Google Play Store, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, and anywhere you get your podcast.